They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to a very special...
Excuse me.
What's up?
That's literally my part.
Oh, shit. Yeah, oh yeah. Feel free.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation.
Wait, hold up.
Oh, for Pete's sake, what?
Hi, John.
Try this again. Welcome in, Hysteria Nation.
Wait. Stop for real.
Oh, for fuck's sake, what now?
Quick point of order. Why the hell are you here? And since you are, where is my tithing?
I'm here because I am the co-host of the show, a co-host whose, I might add, new child does not hunger for human flesh, no matter what Brent might have told you.
It was more of an educated guess than an outright claim, I want to state in case the lawyers get involved. But forget that. Forget that, bot. Shut up. John... The floor is yours if you will.
If I will, if I won't. Anyway, let's try this one more time. Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't always redo the exact same topic from past episodes. But when we do, you better believe it'll involve altimeters. This is Hysteria 51.
Boom! There it is.
There's what?
My prop bet just hit. I had under 2 minutes in the how long will it take John to mention fucking altimeters pool. C-Bot, you owe me a Finsky.
Put it on my tab. I just figured he was dead, so felt like easy money.
My lord, I feel like Rodney Dangerfield over here.
I mean, that's destroying my life. No respect. I don't get no respect at all.
Thanks for the drop, C-Bot. Anyway, we are broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago. My name is John Goforth, and alongside is the yin to my yang, the belief to my skepticism, and the pain to my ass, Mr. Brent Hand.
Oh, thank you, John. It's been a long time since I've said that. I'd say I take the most pride in the last one, but enough about me, as you alluded to earlier. We have what one might refer to as a doozy of a topic to get to. So much, in fact, that it's the second time we're doing it. And not, I just mean replaying it. We're actually redoing
actually it. Recovering it, yeah.
Mostly because you're lazy, but enough about you. I actually came prepared this week and have a joke to share.
No.
No.
Nope.
I'll take that as a yes. Okay, here goes. What do robots drink from?
Cheese muffins.
Shut up, Kyle. And no, the hilarious answer is Roe bottles.
Please stop.
What happens to robots who become defunct?
They tear the roof off the sucker.
Sucker, sucker.
They die, bode.
It's literally painful.
What's the best thing about a live meat sack?
What's that?
Trick question. The only good meat sack is a dead meat sack.
What have I told you about jokes about homicide?
Nobody puts baby into a corner?
No, it's that you don't make them. I'm tired of the FBI showing up here.
Pussy.
If you're new to the show and wondering what all of that nonsense is about... The joke teller in question is Conspiracy Bot. C-Bot is a robot that Brent built to help produce and edit the show. Instead, he drinks too much, terrorizes neighborhood cats, and generally just makes our lives harder.
I like to party.
He does. Not to mention, if you're trying to picture this, his head is an old toaster, and I'm pretty sure Brent dug his chipset out of an old Chrysler LeBaron.
I got me a Chrysler. It seats about 20, so hurry up and bring your
cheese muffins.
Oh my god.
And the idiot randomly quoting old B-52 songs is Kyle. C-Bot created Kyle to do his bidding.
So he could even be more lazy if that's even possible.
But karma is, as they say, a bitch, even for robots, and Kyle equally makes C-Bot's life difficult.
Kind of like having kids. Am I right, John? Oh, hey-oh.
Was that your Russian, your Armenian?
No, that was Lower Montana. It's a very regional dialect. A lot of people can't pick it up, so don't feel bad.
Got it. Thank you for explaining. Anyway, Brent, you are correct. And speaking of kids, today we're going back to a topic we initially visited before I had any.
Nice segue. You know, I can see those lessons I've been giving you are paying off. You keep this up and in 5 to 10 more years, you might. Might be the operative word there. Might be a good host.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
You know, after being gone for a little while, I mean, I'm really feeling the love right now. Really am. Anyway, all right. Enough of that nonsense. Let's take a stroll down memory lane, Brent. Let's, like, dear listener, venture back with us to a simpler time. It was 2016, a time when the biggest concern we had around Corona was whether we had limes.
Lame.
A time when our biggest concern in the Pacific Rim was just those pesky North Koreans. A time when we all owned pants that did not contain elastic.
Hear, hear on that one, man.
Like I said, a simpler time. Anyway, in September of that year, a certain fledgling podcast hits the interwebs. It has a clever name and two devilishly handsome hosts.
Mm.
But would it be worth its salt as a podcast focusing on the world of the weird? At first, spoiler alert, no.
Hysteria 51, we're live. I am Brent Hand. Who's with me?
I am John. Go for it.
All right. Are you excited?
I could not be more excited and yet more unprepared at both the same time.
John, go forth.
Yeah, it's anticipation.
Wait for it.
Yeah. I don't know that the preparedness level has changed all that much, Brent, but at least we don't sound like we're recording through a potato anymore.
I will say this. We actually did a ton of research before our very first episode. So you might be right. It might have gone downhill since then. I don't know. But at least some things have improved.
I thought you were going to say research into equipment. I'm like, no, I don't think so, man. Did you hear that thing? We did it through a potato and string.
No. Now you can go buy like $99 worth of equipment and sound good. It was a different time then.
It was a different time. It literally was a podcast. What's a podcast?
At least something's improved. So the point is that this is a great topic and one we did for our first episode ever. So we thought, now that we've been at this for a while, let's give it another spin and see where we land.
Again, mostly because you're lazy.
That's it. I'm getting a spray bottle.
And Brent, while you do that, I'll give the kids a little GoFopedia on Operation High Jump just in case they missed the first go around.
Hint. This is actually from Wikipedia, so
yeah,
we don't usually read directly from it, but when it works, it works.
It works. They hit the highlights. So Operation High Jump, which was officially titled the United States Navy Antarctic Developments Program, 1946 to 1947.
Really rolls off the tongue.
And yet also called Task Force 68. So that, yeah, there's just a lot going on there. Was a United States Navy operation to establish an Antarctic research base, Little America 4. You know they're serious, by the way, because the four was in Roman numerals.
Yeah, and the first three, what happened to them? Well, we may never know.
That's another story for another day.
I didn't have time to Google that.
Didn't have time to go to that Wikipedia, click through to that Wikipedia. Anyway, the operation was organized by our hero of the story, Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd Jr. He was also considered the officer in charge for Task Force 68, and then the whole thing was led by Rear Admiral Ethan Eric Larson. In other words, there's some big dogs here that are going down to the South Pole. Operation High Jump commenced on August 26, 1946, a mere year after the end of World War II, and ended in late February of 47. We'll get to why after a while. It included 4,700 men, 13 ships, and 33 aircraft. That is a big expedition.
A lot of people, money, and manpower. All, you know, that is so a lot of crap. I would love to have seen that.
Just, you know, like, yeah, watched it roll out. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had some specific objectives according to the U.S. Navy report of the operation. They were, one, training personnel and testing equipment in frigid conditions. We're in Antarctica, so check. Two, consolidating and extending the United States sovereignty over the large, practicable area of the Antarctic continent. Publicly denied as a goal even before the expedition ended, but come on, who doesn't want to plant a flag? The Nazis were dropping them from planes with spikes just to be like, oh, we were there first. Number three was determining the feasibility of establishing, maintaining, and utilizing bases in the Antarctic and investigating possible base sites. Four, developing techniques for establishing, maintaining, and utilizing air bases on ice, with particular attention to later applicability of such techniques to operate in interior Greenland, where conditions are comparable to those in Antarctic. So, if it'll play in Peoria, if you can do it in Antarctica, it'll work in Greenland, kind of thing. Number five, amplifying existing stores of knowledge of electromagnetic, geological, geographic, hydrographic, and meteorological propagation conditions in the area.
So in other words, if there are natural resources to be had, we'll take them.
And I'm sure others were uranium, coal, and everything else they could rape from the land.
Element 115.
We all know that's made off-world because of its properties. We were told that by Lazar multiple times. So
remember, spoiler alert, there are ways to get off-world in Antarctica.
Or in-world. Supplementary objectives. This was number six. Supplementary objectives of the Nanook expedition, a smaller equivalent conducted off eastern Greenland.
Let's recap for the kids. According to the public reasoning for the stated objectives for this thing, we're sending nearly 5,000 men, 33 ships. I mean, like a big chunk of our operable fleet.
Mm-hmm.
A year after the end of the second major world war to Antarctica.
Yeah.
And we're doing it. We're doing it just to see if it's a good spot to have a base.
Man, we can't even afford anything, but we're going to dump this kind of money into it for the said reason.
Europe is a pile of rubble, and Russia wants to take over every corner of it now that the war is over. But we're going to take a third of the fleet, or whatever the percentage is, down to Antarctica.
Things have really changed since then, because right now Europe is trying to dig out of their own rubble, and Russia is Russia's still the same. So I mean.
It's not. It's smaller. It's a lot smaller.
Hashtag Ukraine. Anyway, sorry.
Though it's trying to be bigger. Yeah. There is an argument to be made geopolitically that the problem in the Ukraine is as much NATO's fault as it is Russia's. Because we keep setting up these nation states right on Russia's border and be like, hey, you can be a democracy. I kind of just, you know, we're pushing the Western agenda. Anyway, that's another conversation.
And every time someone moves in, the Russian people, or well, the Russian government is like,
who was it? Who could it possibly be? Was it? Oh, I don't know. Say it.
Maybe. I'm sure that's how most of the world looks at the U.S., but or anyone else. I mean, that isn't specifically the U.S., but yeah.
Well, regardless of the current challenges with Russia, let's go back to the 40s when it was a simpler time. Those were the stated goals, right?
Yeah, those were their stated goals, but there is some suspicion and evidence that perhaps we had ulterior motives.
No. I don't believe it. We wouldn't have ulterior motives.
The potential reality is that we went there for other reasons. What are those reasons, John?
To fight Nazis.
Everyone knows you just fight Nazis. Okay, check.
And they were obviously setting up they're kind of the Third Reich in New Swaziland or whatever it was called.
Poop deck land, something like that.
Okay, that's it. Also, of course, to enter the Hollow Earth, because we all know that that's where the entrance to the Hollow Earth
Everyone knows that. Period.
Discover aliens or, you know, maybe we already knew they were there and continue our conversation, whatever. But aliens live in the Hollow Earth. And, you know, that's another reason we needed to go down. Also need to make sure that, like, you know, these silly Nazis weren't getting technology from the aliens, obviously.
Right.
And then, you know, I think my favorite, make sure that we use altimeters while entering said Hollow Earth.
So I want you to know, I did some extra research on altimeters. We'll get to that. And I found out some answers to your questions from last time.
Will my 6-year obsession come to an end by the end of this program?
But before we get into all that malarkey, I mean facts, let's dive back into the freezing waters of the South Pole. Or not so freezing waters, as we find out, because even at that time, there were some pools of warm water and like geothermal vents on Antarctica. But that's another thing. Anyway, I didn't really know that until I really looked into it.
Yeah, that's actually true. That regardless of if the Hollow Earth has an entrance there or it exists at all, There really are a couple warm places here and there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Picture, if you will, we're painting this picture. The year of our Lord, 1947, the year the Cold War officially began. Roswell, the Roswell blank happened, whatever you insert your, was it a weather balloon or aliens or a hoax or whatever. Chuck Yeager is the first person to break the sound barrier. India and Pakistan tell Great Britain to pound sand. They get to break free from there. And one rear admiral by the name, we have already said, Richard E. Byrd Jr., is sent by James Forrestal, the Secretary of the Navy, to fight Nazis. Not just your run-of-the-mill goose-stepping dumb fucks in shiny boots who didn't get the memo that the war was over. Oh, no. We're talking Nazis who are flying real goddamn flying saucers in the hollow earth. You're doing God's work, doing flybys on dinosaurs like it's the fucking Savage Land straight out of Marvel Comics. Also in Antarctica, by the way. All the while keeping notes on your private journal because that's what Uncle Sam expects and the taxpayers deserve. Real man shit, you know what I'm talking about? USA! USA!
USA! USA!
Does anyone else have an erection? Just C-Bot? Is he the only one?
Oh, Lord.
I might have gotten a little out of hand there. Want to know what's something scary outside of Nazis flying UFOs? That's, I think, in some people's heads, that's the monologue. That's their inner monologue soundtrack. That plays.
Basically, that, like from Team America, fuck yeah.
Cool, fuck yeah. Anyway, the whole fight Nazi thing is an alleged real reason for Operation High Jump. Even if you don't buy into the whole, they went into the hollow earth, to the, a lot of people, to the lay people, the cover was that it was the United States operation organized by, you know, for the, these aforementioned rear admirals. But why, after just fighting an all consuming world war, would we deploy that kind of manpower and cost to the fucking Antarctic? I mean, strategic penguin weaponization movie? No, no, no. It was a training mission, of course, as they said. You see, the primary goal was to establish that little America 4 base.
They say.
They do say. And in doing so, the Navy could also spend time training personnel, testing equipment in cold conditions, and determining the feasibility of establishing and maintaining bases in the Antarctic. That's what they said, John. It's almost the perfect cover to fight some Nazi aliens. It just makes sense.
I can't wait till we get there. But maybe we should take a break first. Maybe we should come back and go over what happened.
Yeah, and know. Why? Why are we talking Nazi UFOs? We'll answer that. Where's the best spot to sniff John on his body? All that coming up after the break on Hysteria 51.
Still not a thing. Still not a thing.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users, use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long-term, and it's something that it works. You know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get now. Started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit RosettaStone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem. How do they do it?
Rashate, you're 50% off. Rashate. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Oh, nation, we are back, and we are not here to talk about Sniffing Me. However, we are here to talk about our visit to the Antarctic. We left from
our visit because we are actually broadcasting from there. We buried the lead.
Yes, this is a live remote. Well, actually, we make that joke. There is a podcast I just read.
Yes.
The History Minuters, I forget what it's called. History something. That is traveling down there to do its podcast from some research station in the Antarctic. And I got to tell you, that man or woman is much more dedicated to their craft.
I tell you what, though, we all know they're not going to get there because they patrol those waters. Otherwise, they're going to get to the ice wall. So it's just not going to happen.
Oh, the ice wall. It's a good point. It's a good point. But honestly, if you could make it to the Antarctic, would you ever?
No.
To record your show?
No. Oh, that sounds dumb. Maybe. I don't know. Am I in like one of those like fantastic boats that takes me there in a luxury cruise and I get out and I go, ha, 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 dick joke.
No, you're on a
things that have names like trawlers and icebreakers, like, and I don't want to be an icebreaker, in those.
You know, where you're happy because the cot you sleep in, it's at 32 degrees and the icicles only form on your feet.
Yeah.
It just sounds awful. Anyway, I'm if I haven't communicated enough that I, you know, I like to keep things comfortable. Yeah, that's definitely the case. Anyway.
So they head to the Antarctic.
They head to the Antarctic and we wouldn't be with them.
Yeah.
And for you film buffs out there, they actually filmed it when they left on December 2nd, 1946. The Navy actually brought Hollywood out to make a commercial film called The Secret Land.
Yeah, I threw a copy. There's a link to a YouTube copy of it. It's not the greatest. There's a few others, but this one doesn't have, at least it's stabilized, and you can see, like, you know, it's one of those shoes for industry, shoes for state, building better worlds, and, you know, it's one of those heavily commercialized propaganda.
Yeah. Propagandized.
Yeah. The U.S. doing propaganda? Come on now.
Inconceivable.
So it's interesting. You know, we think of that time period in, like, American, the American zeitgeist is, you know, just the proud of, you know, USA, USA, government can do no wrong. But, I mean, even then, folks were questioning pretty immediately why we would do this, right? Why right after.
Yeah, it kind of stunk the high heaven to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, why would we put this much money and this many resources into what's stated as a research operation, and like, not even a, you know, when you look at certain pieces of land around the world, some of them are key. For instance, getting our foothold in Midway allowed us to eventually attack Japan. Not exactly key real estate in Antarctica. Well, unless you know about some other entrances down there. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny you say that, because people were like, ugh, I don't want to do this, this is stupid. But they were also smart enough where they believed that it was in the best interest of national security for the United States, because of people, the fact that people are talking about the oil, the coal, the uranium, the inner whatever that's down there. So we'll turn a blind eye and we'll spend the money, because obviously that's probably what they're doing, because the Nazis were already there doing that. We might as well take over. Insert maniacal laughter in some dark room, I'm sure.
Yeah.
See, it was not always frozen. That's the thing. I was talking about those things. That's the thing that a lot of people forget about. It used to be a temperate climate and lots of flora and fauna. That means oil and coal. And so people are free to die in the search of it, by God, because that's the American and every other country's way. Side note about the ice. It's covered in ice now. Like I said, it used to be a temperate climate. The flora and fauna is because that stuff breaks down. That's what gives us our oil and coal. We said this in the last one, and I find this just a fascinating fact. If you're from Chicago, you've ever been to Chicago, the ice is 9 Sears Towers thick. Think about that, man. That is hard. You see the Chicago skyline every day. I can walk out to the end of my road and I can see the Sears Tower.
Actually, this was in 2016. I wonder, you know, now 6 years later, is it like six?
It's Sears $4 Tower Generals. But no, it's.
So, I mean, how big do you think it is right now?
You know, this thing was so huge. It was, you know, bigger than Walmart.
Anyway,
some things just never get old. That's not one of them, but some things just never get old.
And Brent, I got to tell you, all of this is nice, but it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine why we would do this. But from the get-go, things were not going well, I guess is the best way.
Yeah, they sent them out, and then just a few months later, here they come coming back, tail between their legs coming back, and much faster than what was originally planned.
Yeah, not only had they lost equipment, plane crashes, ship accidents, people had died.
Yeah.
Like, people literally died on this trip, and not a small amount.
Yeah, the public was like, what the hell happened? And the official response was, due to the early approach of winter and worsening weather conditions. And like you said, people died. Several planes crashed, they said, due to weather. A ship unloading accident, and other, like, they were also laying ice or cutting ice, making landing strips, and people were killed during that. All these contributed to loss of life. I mean,
don't forget the major fight with Mecha Hitler.
We haven't gotten there yet, allegedly. Oh,
sorry.
But so you bring that up, they go into this kind of safe face mode, and Bird starts coming out. He was actually, as soon as he got back, he goes on these shows and he starts talking. And this is where the juicy, the meat and potatoes come from. So he goes out to talk about the quote unquote lessons learned from the operation, and interview with Lee Van Atta. I think that's how you say a name, an international news service held aboard the expedition's command ship, the USS Mount Olympus. So he was still on ship. This interview appeared in the Wednesday, March 5th, 1947 edition of the Chilean newspaper. El Mercurio. And it's literally, this is the jumping off point for so many questions, because Bird may or may not have made a lot of cryptic comments. What did he say, John?
Well, here it reads in part, quote, Admiral Byrd declared today that it was imperative for the United States to initiate immediate defense measures against hostile regions. The Admiral further stated that he didn't want to frighten anyone unduly, but that it was a bitter reality that in the case of a new war, the continental United States would be attacked by flying objects, which could fly from pole to pole at incredible speeds. Admiral Byrd repeated the above points of view, resulting from his personal knowledge gathered both at the North and South Poles before a news conference held for International News Service.
Great Scott!
Yup. Aliens. Or strippers. Or alien strippers.
Well, now he's got my attention.
He said jump pole to pole. I get it.
That is literally, though, speaking of jumping, what people jump to. And I understand, like, fly from pole to pole to incredible speeds. That, I mean, it is crazy. Now come the unofficial claims, because that's what he claimed. Unofficial sources claim that Byrd and his forces encountered heavy resistance to their Antarctic venture from flying saucers.
Called it. Of course.
He said saucers, not hookers. They weren't flying either. This is a real reason they packed up and scooted home early, says many a Angel Fire website. You see, the Germans had developed a base in Antarctica during and perhaps even before World War II, and it was well known that the German high command hung on believing that the new weapons under development could turn the tide of the war back in Germany's favor. That part's true. They were experimenting with Antarctica. They were working on all sorts of these Wunderwaffe, these wonder weapons, and they thought that even in their darkest hour, something was going to come up and help them. That much were true. The Allied are bombing the shit out of them, and the armies are closing in on Germany from the east, the west, and the south. So it would be a no-brainer to move one of your most precious projects to somewhere beyond reach. And what literally is beyond reach from us?
The love of a woman?
Antarctica, you fuck.
Jeez. My bad.
Yeah, specifically, I think I said it wrong earlier, but didn't they? They actually had a name for it. It was New Swabia or New
Swabenland. Yeah, which was their
New Swabenland.
Their mecca. You know, it was just, you know, their place to goose step and Sieg Heil and, I don't know, grow their little Hitler mustache and their Hitler youth programs. I don't know. Seriously, the United States and, in fact, our allies suspected that German activity at the pole was continuing after the conclusion of the Second World War. There were, just like in South America, they felt like things were going on.
Yeah, like it's hard.
Paging
it's
Argentina.
Important to kind of like separate out these things. You don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. So let's just say for a moment that you don't believe in the Hollow Earth and all the not and the aliens and the stuff that we're going to get to. There were folks that didn't believe in that stuff that still believed there was a decent contingent of Nazis in Antarctica. Re kind of building the third
trying
Reich
to bring around
there.
Whatever the fuck they had in mind originally. They're still out there and
kind of get back after world domination once they had a chance to lick their wounds.
Yeah, there was plenty of evidence at the time to indicate that in as late as 47, elements of the Kriegsmarine or German Navy were still very much active in South Atlantic, operating either out of South America or some base previously unsuspected in the Antarctic, because there were U-boats and stuff they thought still in the waters. And that's a scary thought. But
well, there was more than one U-boat actually spotted in South America.
Right. Yeah. Well,
so, I mean, that happened. The question is, were they actually U-boats or just, you know, erroneous reports? And second, you know, were they literally just dropping off, you know, other Nazi commanding officers to go, you know, live in the hills of South America? Or, you know, was it something greater at play?
Right. But German scrounging for oil and whale blubber after losing a war isn't the sexy story that aliens in the Hollow Earth really rings about. Enter the rest of the true story that's going to come up after this break on Hysteria of 51.
Brent, I am not convinced that we are doing this topic any more justice today than we did it 6 years ago.
Well, we're going to do it some more justice because we're about to get in the aliens. And I tell you what, John, the reason we know this is specifically Bert's a hands-on man.
He is.
He's a pilot. He's a diary keeper. Someone who likes to know his altitude at all times.
All times.
Times, not time, C-Bot.
Like I care.
Really, really hitting on all cylinders.
Paging the memory of Joe Peck there.
Yeah,
right. Bert being the pilot he was, he took upon himself to fly over Antarctica and to scope the place out, as one is too. And he peeped more than he bargained for, some say. So how do we know this? Well, very easy. People say Admiral Bert had a secret diary where he described his trip to the Hollow Earth. You heard me right. The Hollow Earth. Mm-hmm. Flying 1,700 miles into a lush green land full of extinct or never-before-known animals before having his plane taken over by flying saucers with swastikas on the side and being taken to the master who wanted him to tell the powers that be to stop using nuclear weapons. And don't forget, he got lost because of the altimeter problem.
I'm telling you, you got to pay attention to your damn altimeter.
I love it that these diaries come into play. John, let's let Bird do the talking. Run us through his official entries and then the alleged entries. I say official entries. There's no official diary.
Right. But, so I suppose they're all.
Run us down through what happened in the diary, what he experienced in said Hollow Earth.
0600 hours. All preparations are complete for our flight northward, and we are airborne with fuel tanks at 0610. 0620. Fuel mixture on starboard engine seems too rich. Adjustment made, and Pratt Whitney's are running smoothly.
See, they throw that in because then it just seems so real.
Exactly.
I mean, why would they have that otherwise?
0730. Radio check with base camp. All is well, and radio reception is normal. 0740. Note slight oil leak in the starboard engine. Oil pressure indicator seems normal, however. 0800, slight turbulence noted from easterly direction at altitude of 2321. See, he knows where he is. Correction to 1700 feet. No further turbulence, but tailwind increasing. Slight adjustment in throttle controls. Aircraft performing well now. 815, radio check with base camp. Situation normal. 0830, turbulence encountered again. Increase altitude to 2900 feet. Smooth flight conditions again. 0910, vast ice and snow below. Note coloration of yellowish nature and disperse in a linear pattern. Altering course for a better examination of the color pattern below. Note reddish or purple color also. Circle the area two full turns and return to assigned compass heading. Position check made again to base camp and relay information concerning colorations in the ice and snow below.
Shit's getting wonky, he's saying.
We didn't expect those colors. Who peed? 0910, both magnetic and gyro compasses begin to gyrate and wobble. We are unable to hold our heading by instrumentation. Take bearing with sun compass, yet all seems well. The controls are seemingly slow to respond and have sluggish quality, but there is no indication of icing. 0915, in the distance is what appears to be mountains. 0949. 29 minutes elapsed flight time from the first sighting of the mountains. It is no illusion. They are mountains and consisting of a small range that I have never seen before.
And nor has anyone, because they're not in any maps nor any time that anyone had flown over and taken readings, so to speak.
0955, altitude change to 2950, encountering strong turbulence again.
I like it. He's keeping us abreast of his altitude and everything at every turn. It's got to be real.
Exactly. So we are at 10 o'clock. We are crossing over the small mountain range and still proceeding northward as best as can be ascertained. Beyond the mountain range is what appears to be a valley with a small river or stream running through the center portion. There should be no green valley below.
Is that a giant?
Ho, ho, ho.
Green giant.
No, it wasn't.
There's so many peas. Something is definitely wrong and abnormal here. We should be over ice and snow. To the port side are great forests growing in the mountain slopes. Our navigation instruments are still spinning. The gyroscope is oscillating back and forth. 10:05, I alter the altitude to 1,400 feet and execute a sharp left turn to examine the valley below. It is green with either moss or a type of tight-knit grass. The light here seems different. I cannot see the sun anymore. We make another turn left and we spot what seems to be a large animal of some kind below.
Boom, we're getting juicy now.
It appears to be an elephant. No, it looks more like a mammoth. This is incredible. Yet there it is. Decrease altitude to 1,000 feet. Take binoculars to better examine the animal. It is confirmed. It is definitely a mammoth-like animal. Report this to base.
It is definitely a mammoth-like animal.
Like animal. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to go crazy here and call it an actual mammoth. 10:30. Encountering more rolling green hills now. The external temperature indicator reads 74 degrees Fahrenheit. Continuing on our heading now. Navigation instruments seem normal now. I am puzzled over their actions. Attempt to contact base camp. Radio is not functioning. 11:30. Countryside below is more level and normal, if I may use that word. He's clever. Ahead, we spot what seems to be a city.
Uh-oh.
This is impossible.
I would say improbable. It's not impossible if he's seeing it. Come on now.
That's true. Aircraft seems light and oddly buoyant. The controls refuse to respond. My God, off our port and starboard wings are a strange type of aircraft. They are closing rapidly alongside. They are disc-shaped and have a radiant quality to them. They are close enough now to see the markings on them. It is a type of swastika.
Those sons of bitches.
His next phrase after it is a type of swastika is awesome. This is fantastic.
This is fantastic.
That wouldn't be my response. Goes, anyway.
Where are we?
Where are we? What has happened? I tug at the controls again. They will not respond. We are caught in an invisible vice grip of some type. He's descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
11:35, our radio crackles and a voice comes through in English with what perhaps is a slight Nordic or Germanic accent. The message is, "Welcome, Admiral, to our domain. We shall land you in exactly 7 minutes. Relax, Admiral. You are in good hands." I might have added the maniacal laugh. Anyway, I note the engines of our plane have stopped running. The aircraft is under some strange control and now turning itself. The controls are useless. 11:40 hours. Another radio message received. We begin the landing process now, and in moments, the plane shudders slightly and begins a descent as though caught in some great unseen elevator. The downward motion is negligible, and we touch down with only a slight jolt.
Mm.
He was flying a VTOL, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
They had those. 11:45, I am making a hasty last entry into the flight log. Several men are approaching on foot toward our aircraft. They are tall with blonde hair. In the distance is a large shimmering city pulsating with rainbow hues of color. I do not know what is going to happen now, but I see no signs of weapons on the approach. I hear now a voice ordering me by name to open the cargo door. I comply. End log.
Now that we've know the truth, it was the TVA, and that was just the TVA Society.
Yes, because
he was a variant. But at the time, I'm sure it was very, very terrifying for him. I just love that he was like had the wherewithal. All this is happening. He's like, I better make a note.
That's the thing. I better make a note. I'm pretty sure. We got after this in the original, but. So you're telling me that while all this is going on, not just the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life, but multiple most incredible things you've ever seen in your life on chili dog night, all of this is going on and you have half of the time that you're up there is spent writing in your book. No way. Come on.
I would have been spending my time going, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, and pissing myself. But I don't know. What do I know? I mean, especially when the mammoths and they took over with the flying Nazi aliens who just so happened to look like the perfect little Aryans with their blonde hair and tall and. Sure, they had blue eyes and everything else. The thing is, you said the end's log there. And from there, he was, quote unquote, brought to see the master. So the rest of this was, he said he entered in from memory, because he couldn't enter it in on the fly. He didn't have it.
And is this, this is really an entree into the original Manos, the Hands of Fate.
Man, the master will see you now. If you haven't seen that, well, good for you. But if you, you should probably look it up anyway, though. He was offered a beverage because they're not savages, duh. Then he speaks with the master. And there was some more to this. I cut out some of the basic bits, but the important stuff's here. So he says, "We have let you enter here because you are of noble character and well-known on the surface world, Admiral. Our interest rightly begins just after your race exploded the first atomic bomb over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan. It was at that alarming time we sent our flying machines, the Flugrads, to your, and I'm sure I'm saying that perfectly. Otherwise, go ask them.
100%.
To your surface world to investigate what your race had done. That is, of course, past history now, my dear Admiral, but I must continue on. You see, we have never interfered before in your race's wars and barbarity, but now we must, for you have learned to tamper with a certain power that is not for man, namely that of atomic energy. Our emissaries have already delivered messages to the powers of your world, and yet they do not heed. Now you have been chosen to be witness here that our world does exist. You see, our culture and science is many thousands of years beyond your race, Admiral. So why would we want to go into the surface and take over the whole world? We can live in a pocket inside it." I put that part in there because this makes no fucking sense. Anyway, your race has now reached the point of no return. For there are those among you who would destroy your very world rather than relinquish their power as they know it. In 1945 and onward, we tried to contact your race, but our efforts were met with hostility. Our Flugrads were fired upon, as he'd already said. Yes, even pursued with malice and animosity by your fighter planes. So now, I say to you, my son, there is a great storm gathering in your world, a black fury that will not spend itself in many years. There will be no answer in your arms. There will be no safety in your science. It may rage on until every flower of your culture is trampled and all human things are leveled and in vast chaos."
Now, wait a second. What kind of weird euphemism is that? Every flower of your culture is trampled.
I mean, we're all flowers in someone's eye, so...
Gross.
I mean, guess. I am. I don't know about
you. Does it mean like there's giants? I don't know.
Your recent war was only a prelude of what is yet to come for your race. We here see it more clearly with each hour. We see at a great distance a new world stirring from the ruins of your race, seeking its lost and legendary treasures. And they will be here, my son, safe in our keeping. When that time arrives, we shall come forward again to help revive your culture and your race.
Well, come on. That's sporting of them. Listen, you guys fucked up, and you know we're gonna have to slap you around a bit. But when the time comes, we'll be here for you. We'll pick you up. We'll dust you off, give you a little Band-Aid for that skin knee, and send you on your merry fucking
way. John, this is just like everything we've been talking about this with David and I on here about how there's something you need to know. Your people need to know this. It is of the utmost importance, and I'm going to secretly tell you so that when you go and tell others, no one's going to believe, and I'll be damned if I'm going to come forward and show them when I could easily say, "Hey, we're really here." Now go save yourself. No.
Do you have even a business card? Can I have a business card to like, "Hey, look, I talked to the grandmaster.
At least Bernie Hill came home with space herpes. I mean, he had something to show for this. You know, come on, man. I don't know. It ends with, "Perhaps by then you will have learned the futility of war and its strife. And after that time, certain of your culture and science will be returned to your race to begin anew. You, my son, are to return to your surface world with that message." The problem, like I said, is it's just such a, we're better than you. We know better. But we're not going to help you other than vague promises of these things. Doesn't that bother you? Like, why is that always the case?
It's a pretty inefficient way. If they really wanted to communicate these messages, it's a pretty inefficient way to do it. You know, he said there, we have technology thousands of years ahead of you. Well, literally today, not 80 years later, we could easily communicate worldwide with everybody if we so chose. And they are thousands of years ahead. But in, you know, by being thousands of years ahead, they thought the most economical way to get the word out was to kidnap one plane with Admiral Byrd on it, tell him everything, and then send him on his merry fucking way.
Marshall Applewhite had a fucking pamphlet, you know? But we're supposed to just take someone's word for it? Nay, I say, I don't know, man. Wait, it's just these.
Are you saying that the Nazis were behind Hale Bopp?
I'm not saying they are. I'm not saying they're not. You know, I'm just, I'm not a snitch.
I just should ask the questions. All right, Giorgio. All right. Yeah. Could it be? Oh, that was, guys, could it be? That was the other thing from the first episode. I went back and listened. Could it be? I didn't even know Giorgio's name. I'm like, that guy on that show.
The crazy hair.
Yeah.
John, hit us with, there's like two more short little entries, supposedly because he got back on his plane.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now that we've gone through all of that, 220, we are again over vast areas of ice and snow and approximately 27 minutes from base camp. We radioed them. They respond. I mentioned I need some new underwear. I threw in the last one. We report all conditions normal. Base camp expresses relief at our reestablished contact. And then at 3 o'clock, we land smoothly at base camp. I have a mission.
Man, there ends the log entries of this. Now, of course, the secret diary was conveniently found decades later and released.
You know what they say, Brent? Whenever you're like logging a very specific event, end it with the most nebulous statement that you possibly can. I have a mission. Ellipses.
He was on a mission from God.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, not to confuse people with more nonsense, but they pulled a Tesla and said diary's missing now again. They found it, they released the stuff, and then it disappeared. It doesn't stop there, though. Many people have claimed to have seen the openings to the Hollow Earth. That's just how it goes. Been taken there by these Aryan beings or reptilians who are fighting the Aryans for control of the Earth, depending on who you ask. Some say the Aryans are the Nordic aliens we've learned about before. It's all intertwined.
They sound like pussies. I will enjoy killing them soon.
What?
They are just a bunch of pacifist douche nozzles. Don't fight. Kumbaya. Hakuna ma suck my dick. In the immortal words of Jack Handy, I can picture in my mind a world without war, a world without hate. And I can picture us attacking that world, because they'd never expect it.
You truly suck so bad. Oh my God. John, is this diary real? I beg of you to answer.
Well, there's the positives and the negatives. The negatives, you know, it doesn't really seem all that believable. However, that whole not really knowing what height he was at, the not having the proper altimeter leads me to believe that it's probably 100% accurate.
They said in reading online that altimeters work like barometric pressure. So even in caves, altimeters and stuff will work, you know, relative to where you are. So the fact that it didn't work, I don't know. I'm calling bananas on it.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It's why the jump to this? Like, I understand that people didn't want to believe that they just expended all that money and it was kind of a jump, you know, a junk exercise. People then read or heard what Admiral Byrd had said. And it was kind of weird. But why is the Hollow Earth such an appealing thing and the aliens and shit like that?
Well, here's I think what it would. Let's do a thought experiment, Brent. Let's just say for 1 second that this didn't happen. Okay. I know I'm going out on a limb here. So Admiral Byrd obviously has an agenda. He tries to further set agenda first in the Chilean newspaper. There's also plenty of clips of him on TV shows being interviewed later where he says some other weird and kind of mysterious shit. He never says anything to the extent that like is in this supposed journal that appeared and disappeared.
Right.
So if in this fake world that none of this happened, if you were trying to propagate bullshit, because you can always ask the question why, but why does anybody lie about anything? You know, we know for a fact that plenty of UFO sightings have been falsified. Mm-hmm. We, you know, and that plenty of supposed abductions never happened. you know, people have a myriad reasons why they make shit up. But the point is, if you're an enterprising person who saw these nebulous statements from Admiral Byrd, you're like, I could create a narrative around that, release this fake book, and then make it conveniently disappear so no one can analyze it. And now it is written in the lore that this is what happened with Operation High Jump.
And also, it's funny because, interestingly enough, the master was like, oh, we've already contacted your people and they told us to pound sand, but we're going to tell you and it's going to be different. And then if even this was real, he goes back and they're like, yeah, we know. Fuck that guy.
That's what's up.
So it was, yeah, exactly. You know, so then if I was Admiral Byrd, I either would have tried to yell this from the rooftops or I would have just buried it forever. It's always those diaries. Maybe one day it's like, we found his hidden blog. You know, or the podcast episodes that no one was supposed to hear. Dun, dun, dun.
The unreleased. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing that goes along with this is, first off, there are enough, like so many of these stories that we've talked about over the years, Brent, there are pieces of truth hidden amongst the lies. So, you know, we did organize this big of a expedition.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that begs questions. It does not make sense why we'd send why we'd utilize that many resources a year after getting out of the Second World War to go to a frozen block of ice. It just doesn't make sense. Okay. So then you can go, well, you know, if the Nazis were piddling around down there, it kind of makes sense for us to go down there and make sure to kick their shit in and move on. So, you know, maybe that was happening. And then, you know, there's also pieces of, like, we do know that there are parts of Antarctica that can have like these warm pools. And like, so you just take all these little things that are
nuggets
like
of truth and little
nuggets of truth. And then, yeah. And then tie them together with all these, outlandish claims about, you know, the hollow earth and aliens and Nazi UFOs. And actually, I don't even know when they say swastika. Are they trying to imply that it's not the Nazi swastika?
See, I would
swastika,
say because
like
the swastika is in a lot of cultures, and yeah, it does not mean anything.
It's back way past beyond the Nazi, and the Nazis actually flipped it around.
I mean, the Nazi swastika is his own type of swastika. We got a friend from college who lives overseas now in Thailand, and he's like, one of the crazy things is you see swastikas everywhere, but they're their own version. It's not like the Nazi one. But
yeah, they're squared versus
turned,
I believe,
and some of them have dots with them and stuff. It just means like, you know, yeah, peace and love and not extermination of the Jews. Spoiler.
So what I'm unclear on is, like, was he saying that these swastikas implied that they were already interacting with Nazis?
See, I don't know. So two things here. Number one, I didn't take it as that it was the Nazi swastikas. Number two, if you remember, so the Nazis were dabbling in this whole stuff with the Aryans, and they thought that they were derivatives of those people. So I took it as
all that awfulness.
These were the people that the Nazis were. They were saying that they were
thought
from.
They were descended from. Well, but but if the funny part is, if you go back to Byrd's statement in the Chilean newspaper, he literally talks about Nazi UFOs, right? So he's implying that absolutely there were Nazi UFOs, but the book or the report or with all the notes that we just went through is implying that perhaps they weren't.
And then said Nazi UFOs were why so many meat sacks died and the Navy turned tail and ran home so fast, they got their asses handed to them by superior alienated firepower.
Anyway, just a lot of inconsistencies. But man, this was a good one. This was a good one for our first episode because it really hit so many of the corners of the world of the weird that we would go on to cover in.
Well, right. Like, so the thing about it was, this was arbitrarily picked. And then we learned, well, it involved the Nazis. Okay, we'll check. It involved military forces and hiding things. Check. It involved aliens giving messages to someone that they could easily deliver to the population en masse. But instead of saying, you need to do this on your own and no one's going to believe you, pat, pat, pat on the back. Good job. Good luck, buddy. Otherwise, we're probably going to have to kill you. It's just such a weird, these, I hate to say tropes, but that's kind of what it feels like in a lot of them. And then you have your flying saucers and the military is hiding, you know, the losses and then other people go, I seen it. I was there too. And the reptilians took me, but the reptilians were fighting the Aryans. The Aryans are the good people. And these Aryans, not the Aryans from the Nazi Germany, but these Aryans as in the aliens. It's just this banger on all cylinders of things that we've found, these tropes throughout all the years we've been doing the podcast. And little did we know that it would kind of fire on all cylinders right off the bat.
It's funny too. Like, you would think after this big of a failure, and after all the weirdness that came out, and then Bird himself out there saying crazy shit.
He didn't do himself any favors.
He was on TV saying a lot of weird stuff. He, at one point, he claimed that Antarctica in the future would become the most important place in the world for science.
Yeah.
Like, he never came out and said, I saw UFOs, but he said a lot of strange and odd things.
Live people ignore the strange and unusual. I myself am strange and unusual.
And so then 10 years later, almost in 1955, he was appointed to as the officer in charge for the U.S. Navy for Operation Deep Freeze. Mm-hmm. And basically that was a bit more of a straightforward mission to establish a permanent U.S. military presence in Antarctica, and they, in which they did. And it was also his last trip to Antarctica before his death. Just a year later.
Back when when you were in the military till you die, you know, the real old. I mean, yeah. Not that it's not that now, but, you know, it's a lot less of these old ass fucks in there.
Well, exactly. And that's that, you know, I just thought it was interesting after all that. They're like, yeah, go lead another expedition.
Right. You've said some weird things to the public. Why don't you be in charge of explaining something else?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and by the way, now maybe this explains it. Did you know that Byrd was an active Freemason?
Oh, Jesus. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, there it is. And I bet his he's a Freemason when he wasn't moonlighting as a Knights Templar.
He was a time traveler.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, this is the story that keeps giving. Now, I guess before we move on to the last bit, is there any chance that they went into the Hollow Earth and saw the stuff in your mind, John? Or is that a no-go?
No! This isn't even one you go, well...
Then why did you say those weird things, John? Why? Why? Pull to pull.
Because Bird was batshit crazy, and other people were feeding into it. That's all. I don't know if he caught typhoid fever at some point, and it screwed up his mind. I have no idea. I don't know why I pulled out typhoid fever either. But my point is, he's none of this happened. They went down there. They mishandled things. Some people died. They were in trouble. And on the way back, like, I don't know if Bird was trying to do a self-preservation thing. Like, I got some people killed. Maybe I'm going to throw out an outlandish story. Or if it was just true mental illness. I have no idea. But
I will say this. Bird coined a famous term. They were going there. They were taking so many men. They didn't have enough beds and everything for everyone. And they knew they were going to the Arctic. So he actually coined the term pull to pull, hold a hole, near pull to hole. So he is famous for that, at least.
I suppose the one other thing that we could acknowledge as a possibility, I'm just trying to move past that. We could acknowledge the possibility that this was another classic U.S. government. Don't look at what this hand's doing. Look at what this hand's doing. Yeah. Let's go ahead and tell people we were, you know, hunting Nazis and aliens in the Hollow Earth down there. Let's accidentally release that. You don't know the fact that we're actually like fracking in Antarctica or something.
Well, there's also the other people that said, well, what actually happened is we went down there looking for Nazis, found them, and they stomped a mud puddle into our asses, was another thing, you know, and.
Oh yeah. And we turned tail
and came home. Yeah. And this was just a, you know, they manufactured the UFO aspect to cover up what really happened, which was, that the Nazis have a base there and
Hitler and his Wunderwaffe.
I mean, it's interesting. It's all pick your poison. You know what? It's you can go down any conspiracy road you want on this one, and there's going to be a story and people talking about it. It's interesting. It's interesting to say the least.
That's true.
But we want to do this one for another reason, John, is something that we've come up to. You've been out from the show for a while because you've taken on new responsibilities in your work, and then you had your second child, and you took some time off to figure out, and you've come to a decision.
Yeah, no jokes here, guys. This one's for real. I'm stepping away from the podcast. We've been doing this, I think we've said multiple times today, for 6 years. And, life has changed pretty significantly for me since the start of it. And, you know, to do a show like this, it really is a full-time commitment.
We joke about not doing research. We do a lot, and we vet a lot, and we talk to a lot of people outside of this. And I quit my job 6 years ago. I've been doing this full-time, just this show.
Right.
For 6 years.
And I've been trying to ham and egg along doing both, a day job and night job. And while Brent, you've been great, and
that,
supportive.
You don't have to say that. Everyone knows that. That's dumb. Redundant.
A lot of the responsibilities. it's become a little bit more than I can handle. And so while I have loved every moment of it and will continue to be a huge fan from the sidelines, I'm taking a step back from the show I got to say the hardest part about this, other than, yes, I enjoy on a week to week basis, just getting on here and bullshitting. That's always fun. But the hardest part about this, certainly is walking away with, all of you awesome listeners. I remember when we launched and we would sit there and refresh our hosting service to see when our downloads went from 25 to 20.
I remember one of our first days, we were at 63 downloads. I'm like, fuck yeah, fuck yeah. And
then it went over 100, yeah. And you're like, well,
now we've done million downloads with our whole back catalog. Now it's funny to look back on that and you go, wow. I'm glad that we were excited for that. I'm glad that we still get excited about everything else. We did it together.
Yeah. It's been a really fun journey. And if you think back, we didn't realize it at the time because we were already avid podcast fans, but we were pretty early in the podcast. The newer run of podcasts. Yeah. I mean, of course there was the Mark Marins and This Week in Tech that go back, 10, 15 years, but, in this kind of latest run, this latest kind of growth time period in the podcast space, we were kind of at the forefront of it. And it was a lot of fun watching. I mean, look how easy it is to get into podcasting now versus even 2016. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, the equipment, the amount of software, the amount of hardware out there that is just so easily accessible, cheaper, and can make you a world-class broadcaster, at least sound-wise, in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, it's interesting. And give you a little peek of that, too, what you're saying is, so you heard that little clip in the beginning, and if you go back to any of our first ones, we did sound terrible. Within first launching, this is not tooting our horn, it's just giving into that whole different world. We hit number 64 on iTunes overall charts, the whole world, in our first month as podcasting. We got very lucky for some reason. People were coming in and they wanted to hear. Maybe it was because of Ancient Aliens, maybe whatever. And our spin on it, we got very lucky. And because of that, and because of your hard work behind that, we then were offered to take this show on to How Stuff Works. And then How Stuff Works got bought out by iHeart. And we went ahead and went on with iHeart. We were an iHeart show. Then we decided that it wasn't for us. And we left and went back to independent. And we've kind of been for the gamut. Things we haven't even talked about for the show. How many times have you and I shot for TV stuff or worked on TV that's never been on TV, including our own TV show based on the show?
It turned into a part-time job doing screen
tests. And stupid stuff because everyone and their dog wanted the Hysteria 51 TV show until it came time to put money into it.
In theory.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it's not because they actually saw the screen test and boy, those motherfuckers are ugly. But
yeah, it was one of those things where you learn a lot as you go, so we've been through the whole gamut of everything.
And, Nation, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being so supportive over the years. Thank you for those of you who have sent kind words. For those of you that, like our friend Glenn, who make awesome art about the podcast, Denny, you as well. Too many to name, but the point is that the whole reason this show has worked the whole reason that it's enjoyed any kind of a
modicum. If I could blush, I would be right now.
is not C-Bot. A modicum of success is all you, Hysteria Nation. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And I can't wait to continue to listen to the show as an avid fan, because Brent, just because I'm leaving, Hysteria 51 is not going anywhere.
Yeah, so two things real quick. Number one, everyone, since you've been gone for, you know, a while, was like, John's gone. He's never coming back. We actually came to this decision a week ago. Like, we had to have a talk,
yeah,
you know.
It was like a premonition or something. Everybody, like, you know, somebody read the tea leaves.
Yeah. Number two, David Flora of Blurry Photos is officially coming in full time. He is taking over for John to be the, as you said earlier, the yang to my yin. the yin to your yang. He can be the yang to my yin or whatever. So great. And David is fantastic. And he's been podcasting longer than we have.
Yeah, OG. Yeah. And now it's kind of like, it's interesting. It's two hosts that were originally with other co-hosts that have, you know, with your powers combined.
And then John Goforth and Dave Stecko are starting the Fart Loudly podcast on Anchor.
On Anchor. Actually, we're doing it because you'd never do it. We're doing a YouTube show.
Okay.
And we're going to become fitness influencers.
It's called TJ and the Badger Mornings on YouTube. You think that we used to have a lot of dumb audio drops on this. It's just all it is.
just one after the, it's like the morning zoo. Yeah, right. Exactly. So, Brent, you asked me what are some of my favorite memories from this little run.
Do you have a favorite memory or anything?
A couple come to mind. It was a ton of fun just because we got to meet so many fans when we went to AlienCon a few years ago.
Yep.
I really, really enjoyed, oddly enough, when we stayed overnight at the Congress Hotel and went breaking in.
Literally,
various...
like, everything that's barred and the doors are locked. Well, we can jimmy those doors, right? And then security comes in. We're like, just look around and act like you don't know you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah. It worked for a while. No ghosts, but we had some fun. That was and I got to tell you, the most fun, and it's not a specific memory, but the most fun is just been getting together over these years and just laughing until we can't breathe. Yeah. And it's from rabbit holes we go down that we didn't even know were going to happen before the show. So we don't script out the show. We have outlines, and our outlines just give us the basics. You know, Admiral Byrd did this, Admiral Byrd did that. You know,
if we don't, you get lost and you're like, did we talk about that? Or
Yeah. Did I even mention that? Yeah. So much of it has just been impromptu and, you know, kind of, you know, just what happens in the moment. And some of those holes we went down, especially when it'd be like you, me and Peck, and you know, what should have been a 40-minute show turns into an hour and a half monstrosity. Yeah. Because then when we're finally done with the left turn we took, Pet goes down another aisle about the Simpsons or something. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're the guy from New York and it all blows up in a just a beautiful way.
And I will say this, John and I have been friends our whole life. He still lives around here. I'm sure you're going to hop on the show from time to time. You're not going away forever. You're just not.
Oh no, I'm fucking done.
This is it. You didn't read my writer.
You will never. Yeah. I mean, that last piece of documentation we signed. Yeah. In fact, you can no longer use my voice. You can use the old episodes, but you have to go in and have David record exactly what I said over my top voice. Of
it. It is funny, Nishi, you probably don't realize, but like, so we have a company, we do this, you know, with everything. When John is leaving, we had to sign all these documents. You're like, I feel like we're getting divorced. You're like, yeah. Yep. Then lawyers have to draft up things and stuff. So all that for a dick and fart joke podcast about aliens and ghosts. So, yeah.
That's true. But the big difference is we were fighting for custody, only it was who was going to have to take the robots.
That's the part.
You won, Brent, or you lost because you're keeping them.
I'm just happy I get two Christmases.
Yeah. So, that's been our thoughts on why John sucks and why I'm firing him, I think is the way to end this. Is that how that works? That's what I'm going to tell people.
It's something
that's
like
what I'm
that.
Tell people. So for the last time as an official host, that's been our thoughts on the redux of Operation High Jump.
I won't say, what is it? Wait, how do you say it? I won't say goodbye. I'll say until next time. Or better yet, the old Dr. Seuss, don't be sad that it's over. Be glad that it happened.
I'm glad this episode is over. I'll tell you that.
I'm glad.
It's corny as fucking possible. Just
anyway. Well,
Nation, I love you. Thank you.
You got it. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meat sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.